I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast. You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Vivek Bhattacharya. Folks, I'm going to begin this episode by talking about the troubles of working from home, especially when it comes to producing a podcast. You see, my first season, which ran from November of last year to February this year, was recorded entirely in the HD Smartcast studios. Now, the fantastic thing about studios is that you have access to the best microphones around. Boy, do they make a difference. When you listen to all those amazing voices talking to you, remember, they wouldn't sound half as good without a great microphone. Well, thanks to the pandemic, there's been no studio access for my second season. Since May, I've been recording this podcast with a cheap lapel mic. Now, the studios aren't opening anytime soon because, as you might have heard, the COVID-19 pandemic is getting worse. There's no end in sight. So I figured I might as well be ready and got myself a fab new microphone. Now I can podcast from home forever. Anyway, back to climate change. Just like the pandemic, that's getting worse as well. According to the World Meteorological Organization, there's a high chance that in the next 5 years, many months are going to be 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer than pre-industrial levels. Why is that scary? Because the United Nations and the world's governments would like to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2100. And we are close to getting there in the next 10 years. You know what would happen with a 1.5 degree warming? 90% of the world's coral reefs would die out. 75% of Himalayan glaciers would vanish. And according to the live online tracker, globalwarmingindex.com, we are already almost 1.2 degrees Celsius warmer than pre-industrial times. That's just one piece of bad news. The other is that it seems that the world's richest countries, the G20 nations, are doubling down on fossil fuels like oil and coal to kickstart their COVID-ravaged economies. India is one of them. According to new research, G20 nations have committed to fossil fuel-based energy policies to the tune of $151 billion. So is there any hope for a green revival? But first, we would need to understand what a clean energy economy would look like. To answer that question, I will turn to my guest today, Ulka Kelkar. Ulka is an economist and directs the climate program of World Resources Institute, India. Before WRI, Ulka had worked with the Energy and Resources Institute, or TERI, and the Ashoka Trust for Research in Ecology and the Environment, or ATRI. A climate policy specialist, Ulka is best placed to answer our questions. Welcome to the show, Ulka. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Vivek. It's a real pleasure to be part of your Climate Change Mint Tracker podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Now, we've been hearing a lot about a green economic revival from the pandemic, but it seems increasingly that countries aren't really very interested in it beyond talking about it. What I wanted to ask you is, what would a clean energy reliant economy look like ideally, and why is it important?
That's a really nice way of framing it, Vivek, because it gives us, you know, room for hope and optimism. You know, when you're in a war, in a battle, in the trenches, one can't help having the siege mentality, right? I mean, even new parents with a newborn baby sometimes can't see beyond the immediate sleep deprivation or, you know, whatever situation they're in. But so one gets this tunnel vision. And right now, of course, the focus is rightly so on restoring the economy, on restoring people's jobs. But out of great crises in the past have also come great new ways of thinking and innovative new institutions. I mean, whether it's the United Nations or FDR's New Deal or the Bretton Woods institutions or the World Bank and IMF, these have all come out of past crises. So I think even now there is an opportunity to think of or to imagine this kind of clean energy reliant economy. And I would say that even now, it is, even if you look at the numbers that are coming out now, for every $5 that's being invested in fossil fuels, $3 are being invested in clean energy. And many countries are actually coming up with very interesting, emphases, like the European Union is saying, our recovery will be guided by the philosophy of do no harm, and a great focus on green jobs. So this Green New Deal from Europe is something very promising. China, for example, is saying we'll establish 48,000 EV chargers. Germany is saying we'll start looking at how to produce green hydrogen or hydrogen from renewable energy more cheaply. And there are many cities which have decided to say that we'll have more bicycle-friendly pathways. So even in India, there are, I think you would have heard, you know, the two big announcements from Reliance yesterday or in today's newspaper. Where the one that was on the front page was Google's investment in Reliance Jio. But on the sixth page or an inside page of your own newspaper, there was also this announcement that Reliance is going to go net zero carbon by 2035. And they're going to look for things like capturing the carbon from their plants and using it to make other kinds of chemicals or other kinds of products. So I would say that there is still hope. And I'll talk about three or four little examples of what a clean energy reliant economy would look like very briefly. One, for example, is that our own work in rural with you know, seeing rural hospitals in Jharkhand has shown that though there were power cuts, these hospitals were able to use solar power in order to run ventilators even during this coronavirus pandemic. So that's a very key pillar of how rural energy can be provided. Second, you would have seen the kinds of disruptions that are happening with the small and medium enterprises sector, you know, whether it's a garment industry or whether any kind of MSME sector, people are losing their jobs. Now here, there is tremendous potential for improving energy efficiency. But small requirements of upfront capital become huge bottlenecks. And so here there's an opportunity for MSMEs to be supported in a way that they become cleaner, more robust, and they also save money in the form of saving energy. The third example is from electric vehicles. And here again, you know, we are investing a lot in electric vehicles, but the electricity to run those vehicles should come more and more from renewable energy. And that renewable energy, because it is variable, you know, it is generated only when the sun shines and the wind blows, it needs backing in the form of storage, battery storage. So all three of these need to go hand in hand and will be parts of this clean energy reliant economy. Whatever we do has to be suited to Indian conditions. So EVs in India have to be more in terms of two-wheelers and three-wheelers rather than cars. Another very interesting sort of insight that has come out from the recent pandemic is though, you know, when we were admiring the blue skies, outdoor air pollution went down in the lockdown. But indoor air pollution from women cooking in the household went up. So in a country where still biomass is being used, we need to make LPG cylinder refills much cheaper and easier to access for our rural population in particular. In India, after all, land is scarce. So whether we are talking about afforestation, restoration, solar parks, whatever it is. We have to recognize that land is scarce, the land is ecologically rich, and it supports people whose livelihoods depend on the land.
Right.
So we should also go for technologies like rooftop solar PV, which are suited for Indian conditions.
Right.
So that to me is what a clean energy reliant economy would look like.
Right. And it's very true what you say, that any such plans will have to be tailored to the Indian conditions. Now, the second thing, Olga, I want to ask you about is, when it comes to mitigation strategies to limit climate change and its impacts, what are the kind of trends that you've been seeing in as part of your work?
So I would draw on three major global trends. One is that of divestment from fossil fuels. So over the last few years, there has been more and more companies disclosing their investments in fossil fuels.
Right.
And this is something that is being demanded by their investors and the banks, you know, that pension funds that invest in them.
Right.
Many of these banks, multilateral development banks, sovereign funds like the Norwegian Sovereign Fund, have been announcing that we will no longer fund new fossil fuel projects. And the last of these, the Japanese banks, which were still investing in coal, have only very recently also come under pressure to say that we will not support new coal power projects.
Right.
So what is happening is that if we continue to support these kinds of fossil projects, we are going to create more stranded assets, projects that are not going to pay for themselves.
Right.
The second major trend, I would say, is that of a focus on the equity aspect, that is, whose consumption is actually leading to, fossil fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions.
Right.
And here it's the richest people. It is our consumption that is causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think here again, there is hope that a greater interest in a more minimalist lifestyle, a less resource intensive lifestyle would be something that can, show the way forward.
Right.
And the third and most important is what is being called as just transition.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting term that came out of Poland and the coal miners unions over there.
Right.
And as we are shutting down fossil fuel plants, obviously people are losing their jobs.
Right.
So how do we make sure that a low carbon energy transition is also a fair and just transition?
Right.
And here, when it comes to countries like India, we also need to look at the quality of the new jobs that are being created, the new green jobs. How can we upskill people or reskill people so that they're able to access these new jobs? And how can we provide access to finance to create new kinds of livelihoods and enterprises?
Right.
And here, the most important thing is not to just think of these people as men, but also as women, and make sure that the kinds of policies that we put in place, the kinds of systems that we create are equally easy for women to access.
So now, finally, Olga, I would like to ask you, what have you been working on right now?
So I lead the climate program at WRI India, and we are right now focusing on three things. One is this issue of just transition that I spoke about.
Okay.
We are doing a lot of energy economy modeling to try to understand how this would play out over the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Second, we are looking at the tremendous opportunity that exists in India's cities to develop in a way that is inclusive, that is climate resilient, and that is low carbon. So this involves helping city governments make plans, as well as providing training to the kinds of tools and best practices that exist for inclusive climate action planning in cities.
Okay.
And the third is our work with the private sector. We've been working for many years with the corporate sector, and right now one of the most exciting things that we are doing is working with a number of leading businesses who have taken on voluntary commitments. They have internal targets or internal prices on the use of fossil energy within their supply chains, within their enterprise, and to kind of simulate what carbon trading between these companies might look like. So this will help them to be prepared for future regulations, to identify opportunities where they can reduce their emissions and save costs. And also, it would help us provide some insights to the government on what a carbon market for India might look like.
I see. So there's one thing that you said that I found quite interesting, actually, when you said that you were kind of modeling for how things might look in like 40 to 50 years. Like, so you're modeling over a fairly long horizon in terms of time period. So how does that work? If you could just like explain it a little.
So this particular model that we are really very excited about is what is called a systems dynamics model. It recognizes that everything in the economy is linked to each other. If we have more people, we might consume more and we might use more resources. But there are also opportunities for intervention in one sector. Like, for example, I spoke about the electric vehicles in transport that would have consequences in another sector, like electricity generation through renewable energy.
Okay.
So this systems dynamics model helps to capture all of these linkages and to make sure that all the different parts respond to each other. And then we try to vet this extensively with experts from every sector and make sure that these future scenarios that we are trying to model capture what is the best estimate that people have. But the best part about this model is that it lets you, the user, simulate. If you think that India, if you're an optimist or a pessimist,
right,
and you have a particular vision of India, you could change those levers in the model accordingly and see the consequences of the kind of development that you're imagining. So it's really in your hands, not just in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, but also in terms of air quality and human health and the costs on different sectors.
So thank you so much, Ulka, for taking the time to come on the show. It was great having you here and very enlightening too. And all the best for your work.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, Vivek.
That was economist and climate policy expert Ulka Kelkar, taking us through what a clean energy economy would look like, especially in the Indian context. That's it from me today. Join me next week as I speak to a special guest and also bring you up to speed with news of the climate crisis. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on any of your favorite platforms, including Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. Follow HT Smartcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle HT Smartcast. And write to us at podcasts@hindustantimes.com. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week. And remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.